Hi, everybody. I'm Tamarack. This is the Diamond Path. We appear here weekly on WBCR on 8:30s Sunday mornings and 1:30 at afternoon. Excuse me, 1:30 on Monday afternoons. Repeated. The same show is repeated again 1:30 Monday afternoons. And we actually have an internet site. It's called diamondpath.blogspot.com. And you can pick up some of the earlier talks if you log on to that. Well, tonight we're going to discuss attachments. Big word in Buddhism, attachments. It's really the reason we're here on this phenomenal plane at all. So let's kind of investigate what we mean by attachments. First of all, an attachment usually means a desire or an aversion, and a desire and aversion are really the same thing. It's just the flip side. Either you desire to have something or you desire not to have something, like an aversion to bad health or a tornado in your neighborhood, something like that. The concept of attachment is so basic to Buddhist thought that this is something else that we'll be going over and over again throughout the weeks. It's one of those things that you just have to latch onto and get a good handle on before it makes much sense, and how it reflects on how one leads one's life. So attachments, basically, they mean something that makes us feel good. They're a support. We keep up our attachments because we look at them as something that will make us happy, make us feel better. But the illusion always is, and this is it, it's always this way, is that, wow, if I just had, everything would be better. Whatever it is, fill in the blanks. If I had a big screen TV, my whole TV experience would be better. My life would be better. If I had a bigger car, if I had a nicer family, if I had a thinner waist, and my butt was smaller, you know, whatever those things are, they're all a view of something that we mistakenly think is going to make our life better. That's what an attachment is. Let's start small. Attachments. We have personal prejudices when it comes to food. And if you're like me, you thought, well, so what? I'm able to eat some things. I don't like other things. I dislike. Plain and simple. Fine. That's eventually how it comes down anyway. But so often we're locked into patterns and thoughts that are not based on reality anymore, at least anymore. Let me give you an example. When I was growing up, my mother used to cook spinach. And the way she would cook it, she would boil it until it turned into this gelatinous mass and then pour apple cider vinegar over it. And that was spinach. I tell you, when I left home, I don't think I had another bite of spinach for 15 years. That was spinach to me. Of course, then I discovered raw spinach and all the wonderful dishes that you can make with it and the fact that you don't have to boil it for 20 minutes to eat it. And now I love spinach. So personally, over the last many years, I've reflected on all of these food prejudices I've had, and with a new mindset, based on paying attention to what was happening, I decided that most of these foods, maybe I didn't love them, but I used to say, like, I don't want to eat that, I hate it. And then I realized, no, I didn't really hate it, I just didn't like it. And then I would try it again, and I would find something in the flavor that was okay. Wouldn't be my favorite, maybe, but it was okay. So as it stands now, there's so very few things that I won't eat. In fact, there's nothing I won't eat, but there's a few things I still don't like, despite my best efforts. But that's just an example. That's a very small example. When you talk about attachments, it can be things as well as, something as simple as taste buds. Back to the idea of TVs, objects, all those things, the shopping that we need to do to make us feel better. How many people out there are shopaholics? When they feel depressed, they go shopping, because that will alleviate my suffering, and I will feel better. Well, that only works until you get it home and open the package. Now you own it, it's in your hand. It takes a few moments before the sheen wears off, and now you need something else to bring back that same level of satisfaction. It's a continual process. And it's not just things. It's that simple. It's not just TVs and cars and stuff. We're attached so much to our emotions. Our reactions to other people, our reactions to events and things, so often they're entirely habitual. We look at a situation, we don't like it, we react, boom, something happens. The lack of skillfulness in that interaction has made whatever was happening worse. We keep grasping at all these things that we think are going to make us happy, when in turn, and the truth is, the grasping alone is what makes us unhappy. Grasping for attachments. If we're reacting in a negative way to something that someone did to us, and, you know, people are always either deliberately or mistakenly acting unskillful in their own ways, and they hurt our feelings, or they completely turn us off in one way or another. We always have a choice on how to react, but most of us look deep into ourselves, we see how we reacted to things like that in the past, and we react the same way. We are attached to the way that we react. Some people actually like getting angry, or they say they do. If something happens, this whole rush of adrenaline, this explosion, they think is just a natural part of this reaction, a natural part of dealing with something like that. When in truth, the unskillfulness of it probably made the situation worse. So our feelings are attachments to our anger, attachments to our greed, attachments to our fear. Fear is a big one. And we don't tend to think of fear, as an attachment. I was asking my priest when I first started out in this path about fear. I said, why don't we have that as a separate thing? We have three poisons in Buddhism. It's ignorance, anger, and desire. But no mention of fear. I'm saying, well, where was fear? Fear is big, you know. It was big in my life, big in a lot of people's life. Well, fear is actually just a desire. Fear is desiring an outcome other than the one you're fearing. So if you're going to go give a speech, or you're going to go do a play, or you've got some art project that everybody's going to look at, you know, it's natural to have some fears coming up, but it's what you do with it. If it cripples you, then that attachment becomes extremely vivid, and the suffering it can bring becomes extremely vivid. If the fear bubbles up, we can look at it and recognize it and say, wow, I'm afraid. I'm a nervous wreck here. But if you just don't worry about it, you don't take the fear so seriously, it doesn't become this all-encompassing attachment to it, you can just kind of let it rush over you, let a little bit of adrenaline pop up, and then put it down and just do it. Ignore the fear and do it. And the next time you do it, it becomes a little simpler. And as you do this sort of thing more and more often, your fears start to drop away because you've done it enough, you've become familiar enough with it. So, I mean, after all, what is fear? Fear is a future tense verb. It's fear of what might happen. And our minds can always think about all these things that might happen. So if we're attached to habitual ways of reacting, habitual modes of emotion, habitual needs for things that support us, then we're not operating with all four legs. It's almost like another word for an attachment I realized the other day was crutch. Think about it. If you've hurt your leg and you need to walk, you use a crutch. Great. But at some point, you put the crutch down, you get back on two legs, and you're back whole again. An attachment is like a crutch that we never give up. It's always got to be there. If I don't have a car adequate to my position, that's a crutch. I mean, if I do have a car, that's the crutch I need. If I fail to have a car, then I feel inadequate somehow. Where's my crutch? Where's this thing that will give me a social status? The crutch is a useful tool in life, but then you put it down, And the crutch becomes a useful reflection in mental life. You see, wow, I have used this as a crutch. This has been part of my ability to work in the world, is having this crutch, this extra help. And extra help in terms of something like a crutch will eventually wear out its usefulness. You no longer need it. So attachments. The greatest attachment, the one that actually brings us to this plane of existence, and I'm probably going to go in an area where a few of you people are going to say, I'm not even buying this, so I'll try to tread lightly and have you reflect on it perhaps on your own. In Buddhism, there's a thing we have called rebirth. Now, it's not reincarnation. A lot of people think that Buddhists are all about reincarnation. Reincarnation posits the concept that there is something to reincarnate. Something like a soul, where once the body of this life has been shed, the soul moves on, is reborn or reincarnated, and gets another shot at getting it right. Buddhism, there is a specific area where reincarnation gets close, but generally it's rebirth. And rebirth is another whole concept. Now, the only way to look at this kind of concept of rebirth is through analogy. So let's take one of my favorites. Well, actually, two of my favorites. One is classic. They're both classic. If you had a candle and it burned to the very, very end, and then you used it to light another candle, now, is that the same flame or a different flame? It's obviously combusting on whatever the new wick has to offer, not the old wick, but it's still the flame. To look at it, it appears pretty much like it did on the last candle, and yet it's different, or is it? Another analogy, one I like even better, is the wave analogy, because it works on many levels. If we look at the ocean, let's say, and there's a wave, that wave can be measured. We can lay out all the parameters of that wave. We can check the chemical composition of that wave. We can check what's in that wave. Is there seaweed? Is there fish? Is there a shark? Is there jellyfish? Is the salinity higher maybe on this particular wave than it is on the previous wave? Any of those things. You can take a wave, measure it, and make it unique. But when a wave spends its energy, it drops all of those things in the real physical world. It no longer has a height, a trough, the salinity, whatever's in it, because the wave drops, and then the wave continues on, but the water that wave was in is now just sitting there, waiting for the next wave. The energy that continues is much like rebirth. It's almost like this infinite pattern of energy that finds unique expressions in individuality, but when the conditions that support that individuality fail, that doesn't mean the energy fails, it continues. So the energy goes on to another rebirth, and this is where it gets a little fuzzy. It's not us. Buddhism does not believe that each of us comes through to the next birth. But what does come through is attachments. Kind of weird, huh? The consciousness on some level is what we're talking about here. It's not a collected consciousness that makes conscious decisions, but it is a consciousness that has been formed by certain attachments and certain predilections and prejudices and habits. This is what's reborn. So when the new life comes to be in a new body, you know, it's not bringing anything with it from the physical world. If someone's an African-American, they're not necessarily going to be born African-American, or from one country to the other. None of those physical traits follow, because that what supported those physical traits was life and the interaction with all of life, and that's gone. What continues is this universal consciousness that has been imprinted with the desires and attachments that allow it to cling to this world. And what I mean by that is that, let's say, well, the Buddhist path, or any path that brings one to awakening. Buddhists believe that if one is completely awakened and enlightened, there is no need to be reborn. There is no rebirth. When one is enlightened, one's dropped all of one's attachments. So being reborn is not even on the program anymore. And why is this? Because ultimately, our greatest attachment is this life in general. We fear death unreasonably, and we want to stay here. Even if life is pretty bad, I mean, how many people do you know that have suffered their whole lives, but, you know, they're not going to commit suicide? They still cling to this life. Of course, a large part of it is ignorance. We don't know anything else. What happens if there isn't this life? Where do we go? Well, there are possibilities out there that are mentioned in the Buddhist canon over and over again about enlightenment, about reaching a position where the compulsion to be reborn becomes minimized. So rebirth is the preeminent position of attachment. We become reborn because we are attached to this life. We want to be here. And who wouldn't? I mean, God, we live in the Berkshires. This is a great place. Of course I want to come back. I want to be here. But it all speaks to that concept, the first noble truth, that life is suffering or life is discontent. We don't want to leave because we think we like everything here. But then if we really examine here, there's so much that makes us unhappy. And I don't mean that each of us lives a life of, that we live a bad life. Much of us here in the West live pretty good lives. But ultimately, others die. Terror is wrought on people we love. And ultimately, we get sick and we die, and we may suffer at some point. That's what's meant by suffering. Inherent in each life is discontent. And it's based on the idea that we are always grasping at something to make us content. We're grasping at those things that we think will make us have a better life. And it's not just a better life. Our grasping is, we think we're going to be made permanently happy. Oh, if I only had, or if I could only do this. It's always that grasping for things that are going to make this life happier in a permanent way. That's the illusion, that if I could just have this, my life will be better. And we don't think in terms of my life will be better for the next week. We always think my life will be better because of this. That's the attachment. And if we don't get it, we're not going to be as fulfilled. We're not going to be as happy. But then, when we do get it, we're still not fulfilled, and we're still not happy. All of those desires and attachments we think we want fade away, and we're faced looking at another set of what I need and what I want. So attachments are the main anchor to keep our mind from enlightening. The view from enlightenment is so free of that sort of stuff that it's something that we strive for as Buddhists. And we strive for it with all the effort and the mindfulness that we can. And we don't strive just for ourselves either, because we are so interconnected in everything we do. This striving is a gift that we give others. Whatever we've learned on this path, or on any path, whatever we've gleaned about living life in a mindful way, we need to pass on to other people. We need to help everyone make this realization together. And the thing about holding us back, as I said, is attachments. So think about attachments over the next week. Think about things that maybe you have a little too much of an attachment for. And don't judge. Don't, because when you tend to judge and you're looking at some of your own emotional baggage, we often look away because we say, ooh, that's bad. I don't want to look at me as a bad thing. That is such a trap. That's why we never talk about good and bad in Buddhism. It's just skillful or unskillful. If we have an attachment, whether it's an emotional thing or an attachment to alcohol or an attachment to drugs or attachment to any of these illusions of complete happiness, look at them. Contemplate them. Don't lie to yourself. It's the one thing that one can't do on a path of enlightenment is to lie to oneself, and we all do it. But the more you look at the actual nature of our attachments and the nature of our emotional baggage, the clearer it gets. And if we do it without a judgmental view, it's a little easier to take. We can just say, oh, wow, I was a real jerk there. Doesn't mean you're bad. It just means you were a jerk right there. Just noticing that, recognizing perhaps why you did that, and on a deeper level, one can go back and try to determine where the initial thoughts that took you to that space came from. It's a little like psychoanalysis, only you don't have anybody else sitting there listening to your thoughts, and you're not paying a lot of money for it. Buddhism's often been compared to psychology, and very, very valid, because it's all about understanding oneself. And it's not easy, because we bring, even to the cushion, all of our attachments. We have to wade through the attachments, wade through the conflicts, and wade through all the mishmash that we've collected over the years. But if one continues to look deeply, honestly, non-judgmentally at our habits and our ways of thinking, that alone opens the perspective. One starts to see, gee, could have done better there. Maybe I need to change A, B, and C, or maybe just A today. Maybe I'm not ready for B. We'll look at it again tomorrow, and then maybe you'll find a D, E, F tomorrow that's other methods, other ways, or other examples of the same feeling coming up in different spheres. The path of total introspection, total mindfulness, total desire to understand one's own mind can only act to illuminate and understand everything about oneself. And when you finally got your own stuff together, or you're on the way, you understand, wow, I'm starting to get it. I'm not this selfish, self-centered boor anymore. I can see where maybe I wasn't paying attention to the people around me. I can start to glean the truth and understand the benefits of this path. Then, when you finally understand yourself well enough, you start bringing it into the world. You start letting your friends know. You start acting in a more compassionate way. And you bring everything you've learned inside that skull of yours and inside that heart of yours into the real world. So enough about attachments. I'm attached to this radio station, WBCR, here in Great Barrington. Again, the Diamond Path appears twice a week. It starts at 8:30 on Sunday morning, gets repeated again Monday afternoons at 1:30, and you can find us on the web at thediamondpath.blogspot.com. This show is a production of the Higashi Tendai Buddhist Sangha and the Housatonic Radio Works. And until next week, Gassho.